The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, to the Chris Perillo Show.
All two of you.
Starring Jake Ludington and...
Bree Pettis.
All right.
But not in that order.
Yes. I'm actually Bree Pettis, and that other guy is...
Jake Ludington.
And we've had some interesting conversations recently.
We have had some interesting conversations.
We've been talking about becoming a domain mogul.
In theory.
And we've been I just got a new toy.
You got a really cool new toy.
Jake is showing me something that does not exist, that you can't see either.
Yes.
Do you want to tell the people what it is?
Are you under
a non-disclosure agreement?
I am actually under a non-disclosure agreement. It is a music playing application that does not currently exist.
Okay.
That runs on Windows XP.
Non-disclosure agreements. Very interesting.
You know, I have more non-disclosure agreements with Microsoft that it's amazing that I can even utter the words Microsoft or Windows or anything like that.
I recently signed my first non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah?
And it was very exciting. I actually went back and forth a little bit.
With who?
With, well, I
you
guess...
You can't disclose that.
With a website that's open... it's with a website that's starting about... I think I talked about this last time, too. About photos and video stuff.
Oh, yes. You did talk a little bit about that.
And basically, I had to strike that my know-how was not... I could talk about any know-how that I gained... The words know-how. I struck know-how from the thing because I just thought, you know,
that's
if I get know-how, I'm gonna know how to do something, and you just really cannot hold me back. If I know how to do something, I gotta do it. I gotta, you know.
That's kind of how I feel, you know. And I think if I end up becoming a domain mogul,
yes,
I'm gonna feel compelled to send a registration fee off to the people that run the domain roundtable because. I feel like this is like one of the first conferences that I've been to where I have really learned a ton.
So for everybody out there who hasn't been listening to us for the past half hour before we were doing the show, Jake, for the past 2 days, has been going to the most interesting conference he's ever been to in his entire life.
With the exception of Gnomedex, because I really, really do like Gnomedex.
And I would say, actually, Gnomedex is untouchable as well.
I'm biased, though, because I helped plan the first three Gnomedexes, so I sound a little, I come off a little biased in the whole Gnomedex situation. But seriously.
But, Gnomedex, I came out of Gnomedex with good friends and connections, and, you know, basically I went because I was like, you know, I'm becoming a mover and shaker in this world of media online. I need to be where the movers and shakers are. And somebody said, well, you need to go to Gnomedex. And so literally that's all I knew about Gnomedex. Was that there was going to be really interesting people there, and that's where the cool people went. And I decided I was going to be a cool person, and I went.
And did you...
I'm now an officially cool person.
You're officially cool.
Gnomedex certified.
Officially, you need to put up a little officially cool label at imakethings.com.
I do. I need an imakethings.com officially cool certificate of authenticity.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about domain... Domains.
Domains. Domain Roundtable.
Domain Roundtable, people.
Domain Roundtable is a gathering of approximately 300 people that are either what is classified as a domainer, someone who either prospects and or invests in domains.
Hi, I spend my days working on domains. What do you call me?
A domainer.
I'm a domainer.
You're a domainer.
And it sounds like a character in He-Man.
A little bit.
Like you got Skeletor, and then you got the Domainor.
Either that or it's a little bit like a Trekkie.
Yep.
Probably being a character from He-Man is better.
So describe to me a domainer. What do they look like? Give me these.
You know, they just look like people. I mean, they look like everybody from guys in suits to guys in sweatshirts and jeans.
How many women domainers were there?
You know, the audience was probably, I want to say 80% male.
Yeah.
Kind of like every tech event that I go to.
Yep. So we're talking 80% male, so we're talking out of 300, we're talking like 60 women.
Yeah, that's probably in that ballpark. Right. I'll have to look again tomorrow and see if I...
How many people of color? Any people of color?
Yeah, there's a lot of variety. Okay. People actually, because this is a conference that actually has brought people in from all over the world. So this isn't just a North American centric conference, even
or even a
Northwest centric. This is a very world centric conference. Although I would say that it is more concentrated in European countries and North American countries, as opposed to being truly global in terms of like the prospecting business. But I don't know, if that is because in certain countries, even like I know to a certain extent, like in Germany, mm-hmm. owning the .de domain in Germany is more important
than the .com.
And so I don't know if
in the UK, .co.uk.
Yeah, so I don't know if that has a little bit to do with who would be attracted to this type of conference. Because, I mean, like, the people that tend to prospect in domains are fairly non-discriminate in terms of what kind of domains they want to get. Obviously, they want to get good generic terms
right.
that are going to resonate with whoever would possibly visit that domain. So, like maybe you would get flooringtiles.com if you wanted to sell a domain to
right.
somebody in the flooring business. And you know, I'm just using that hypothetically. I don't even know who owns flooringtiles.com.
But. Well, it's somebody probably who – well, you know, it's interesting. Somebody hopefully who has an interest in flooring tiles.
Well, flooringtiles.com probably is either owned by a flooring tile company or somebody that hopes to sell their domain to a flooring tile company for a large sum of money.
Right.
So – today, Mark Aronofsky, who is kind of the guy that sort of started this whole, I don't know if you want to call it a gold rush, but I mean, it's sort of this whole domain as investment concept when he sold business.com for $7.5 million a few years back.
And he sort of broke it wide open.
He broke it wide open. There's another guy that I met there that owns television.com that said he sold... I don't remember what the domain was, but he sold a domain for about $50,000, probably previous to the business.com sale, and actually had a story on him in the Wall Street Journal about it and some things. And that, I think, sort of brought some of the first attention to selling domains, but not on the scale of, you know, not $7.5 million, oh my God, that's a lot of money scale.
Right.
And it's really interesting, the stories behind some of the stories and some of the philosophies, because like I am very much a part of the whole blogging philosophy. If somebody does something cool, I want to link to it and tell people about it. Like if you do a cool video, I want to tell people that Bree did a cool video. The domain people, like if I had this killer domain, whatever it is, like bobswidgets.com. Let's say bobswidgets.com mm-hmm. for whatever reason attracts thousands of visitors a day who just happen to type in that domain and they hit it. And so I'm making six figures a year in advertising from people typing in that domain.
Because you might just have advertising on there.
Because I might just have advertising on there. And I do not own bobswidgets.com, just for the record.
Right.
And this is
a hypothetical situation.
This is completely hypothetical. But if I did and I was making six figures a year in advertising from it, I would not tell anyone else in the domain business that that's what I was doing. Because
somebody would get bobs-widgets.com.
Well, there's partially somebody else that might have a competing category domain might try similar tactics to make money and thereby possibly leech some money away from you, which mm-hmm. I'm personally of the opinion that if we both blogged about the same things, that in the long run, like by linking to each other, we could both come out ahead rather than one of us bringing the other one down.
Right.
That's my own personal philosophy about how linking to someone else works.
Well,
I don't know whether there's truth in that, but
I think the blogging world is a community building thing. I mean, your cred is up based on how
a lot
connected
of it's based
you
on
are.
This. Yeah. But this is a completely different philosophy in that I want to keep my secrets to myself.
Right.
Well, and I think partially it is because if you have a domain that's doing well, somebody might try to use some tactics to either A, steal it away, do a denial of service attack against it so that it won't work. There's the possibility that they might sign up for one of those things so that if it accidentally expires that they can grab it up away from you. And I suppose also knowing how much money any one given domain makes puts like some kind of evaluation on it so that you know whether or not the person that, because the person may be also trying to sell it.
Right. And so I want bobswidgets.com, and you tell me, well, it's making how much money?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I go, oh, so that means I have to pay at least that much money for it.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's all based on, and like the way the domains seem to be sold is it's all based either on, like, if you really want a domain that's relevant to your industry, you might pay more for that domain. Or if it's also a domain that actually is something that generates a lot of traffic without any, you know, without any, if it generates traffic from content, like say JakeLeadington.com generates traffic because I write stuff there. Now, nobody's going to buy JakeLeadington.com for lots of money because my name as a domain name isn't really worth much if I stop writing there.
Right.
But at the same time, if you have a domain that both is a fairly generic, like say flooringtiles.com, and you were writing anything about flooring there at all, so that people were actually getting something of value out of it, then that drives up the price of the domain.
Right.
And then there's the third aspect of if it's just something that people tend to type in that and end up there, and that's generating some ad revenue, and you can prove statistics to show.
Like probably love.com or something.
Love.com, right? That's probably like some crazy like porn site or something. But
yeah.
But I mean, that's another metric for helping determine the value of it is you know, how much just sort of accidental traffic that shows up there. Mm-hmm. Is there.
So the amount of just accidental traffic has an impact on the value of the domain name. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, and I was actually surprised. They were talking about the sale of golf.com in a panel discussion that I was in yesterday, and about how much money it had sold for. Time Warner bought it because it's probably, and they were quoted as saying that it was like the most valuable name in golf for domains.
Right, the most valuable golf domain name.
And I did some comparisons of, you know, like some Alexa traffic, which I mean, you know, isn't really highly accurate, but I did some comparisons. I actually get more traffic than golf.com does to my site.
And well, you have all this added value.
But nobody's going to buy my site for multi-million dollars cuz it's not golf.com.
Hmm.
So, I mean, the bottom line is I should be doing what I'm doing only at a better domain name,
so,
I think.
So that people could find you easier?
Well, not necessarily so people could find me easier, but because the content is actually attracting
value.
Visitors.
Right.
Then if I attach a better domain name to it, then the overall value in theory would be higher. Not that I'm trying to sell my domain, but it's just this is sort of
fascinating.
It's a fascinating.
You're learning. You're in this world and thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is all I've been thinking about for the last 2 days because I'm kind of like right there and in it. And actually, for anybody out there that, because I register a bunch of domains, I'm not what you would call a domainer, because I'm not in the business of either investing in domains or speculating in domains, hoping that I'm going to get more money out of them. I just if I have an idea for something that might be a cool blog, I tend to like kind of brainstorm on some names and check to see if domain names are available and if I can pick them up for, you know, like the $8 or $9 that you can find a registry for, I'll go register them. So I've got like, I don't know, like 50 domains that I've done this with, 50 or 60, I don't know. So there's this company called Cedo.
How's that spelled?
Cedo.com.
Okay.
And they have a parking service for your domain. So like essentially you go into their interface and you say, I own these domains, and you actually have to prove that you own them by going through a couple steps. But you say, I own these domains, and you configure them in their system. And at your registrar, you change the DNS settings so that they point to the name servers at Cedo.com. And you get ads. Like, if you've ever visited a domain that's parked, like if there was a domain that you wanted, but you couldn't get
like pinkbunny.com.
So pinkbunny.com has some ads on it.
It does. It's parked.
So they've got ads on there. And what they do is they will handle the ads for you. They will tell you how much traffic that you're getting, and you can put a value on that domain. So pinkbunny.com, let's say I owned pinkbunny.com. I don't.
And I own pinkbunny.org.
Do
you? Let's say you do.
But let's say I own pinkbunny.com.
And I want it.
And you want it. But I'm going to, on Cito, I can post a value, like how much I think it's worth. Like, let's say I think that pinkbunny.com is worth $5,000, just arbitrarily.
Sure.
I can, in their system, I can say that I want to sell pinkbunny.com, or I'm willing to sell pinkbunny.com for $5,000, and I want to park it. And so if anybody happens to type in Pink Bunny and hit that site and maybe clicks on an ad, there's some ad revenue generated there. And if you decide that you're willing to spend the crazy amount of $5,000 to own PinkBunny.com.
I just contract Cedo.
You just use Cedo as the payment broker. They get 10% of the sale, so they would make $500 on that $5,000 sale. I would pocket $4,500. Minus however many years I've been paying domain registration fees.
Right.
And, you know, in theory, if I didn't really want pinkbunny.com, everybody wins.
Wow, I've been adding all sorts of value to pinkbunny.com by having pinkbunny.org. I never thought about it that way.
You might have.
I'm sure people who go to Pink Bunny, who look for Pink Bunny, go to pinkbunny.com.
Now, who is actually looking? Oh, you mean people that are actually looking for your puppet show, Pink
Bunny?
Yeah. That's probably true. I wonder if that is a domain for sale at Cedo, because they have like 500 million domains.
Search over 3 million domains for sale, it says there.
Oh, they've only got 3 million for sale, but they've got this insane number of domains under you can say that you want to acquire it now. See, and it says you're already registered with pinkbunny.org. But acquire it now means that it's not for sale through their system.
Ah.
Doesn't mean it's not for sale. Because there's also like Afternic does sales like this. Moniker.com, I believe, does sales like this. I'm trying to think who the other companies were that were there. Oh, Blue Sea, Deep Blue Sea. We actually talked to them at SES in New York in 2005. So
cool.
A year ago.
Cool.
But in February 2005, we actually talked to them. And that was actually the first place where I kind of had heard a little bit about this whole domain brokering. I mean, I knew that it was out there, kind of, but I had never really paid attention to it. And they said that they had, like, I don't remember if they said they had 500,000. They must have it must be 500,000, not 500 million. But I think they said they had 500,000 domains that they managed. And they have domains for sale as well. So there's all these places where there might be domains for sale. And then there's sites that deal in auctioning domains. Like there's these domain auctions,
right,
where you can go and bid on a domain.
A buddy of mine did that like a year or two ago. He's had a house cleaning business forever called Tidy Boy, and he registered like Tidy Boys and all these different Tidy Boy things, and he's actually got it trademarked, and he managed to get tidy.com early. I guess. And the Tidy Boys are also a band in the UK.
Really?
And they called them up and they said, hey, you should give us tidyboys.com. And he's like, no, my business is Tidy Boy. But they're like, yeah, but man, we've got a band. And our band is called Tidy Boy. And you should give it to us. Because we have a band, man.
Of course, you have a band.
So. And so he didn't sell it to them. He said, I'm sorry. But then he eventually decided to let go of tidy.com, and he put it up at one of these auctioning sites you're talking about, and it sold for $40,000. Guess who bought it? The Tidy Boys band, man.
So the Tidy Boys actually had like 40 grand sitting around, but they just didn't want to pay.
They didn't want to pay. They just expected he would give it to them. But at an auction site, then it had value.
Oh, okay. So because he was just an individual, it wasn't worth anything. But as soon as he went, and actually pinkbunny.com appears to be at name administration, appears to be who owns it. Apparently tidy.com isn't smart enough to make the it work without www. Either that or I can't type. Yeah, so the Tidy Boys are, and that's another thing. If you can't hit your site without typing www, like if you only type in tidy.com and it fails, that's a problem.
What's the secret to getting just like if you said tidy to just go?
If you just type tidy?
You just type tidy.
I think there's something.
What happens if we just type tidy? Well, they aren't
Firefox.
Smart enough to make it go like.
And the band must not own this site anymore.
No. I don't know. What is this thing? Tidy.com. Tidy places.
It looks
morning.
Like a party site. Looks like a club.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a club. DJ, yeah, DJ stuff. Anyway, if you just type tidy.com in the address bar, or tidy with nothing else in the address bar, depending on how you have your search set up, it will occasionally automatically flip to like a Google search.
Because I've noticed sometimes it'll do something and sometimes it'll just go to like an actual site.
In Firefox, you can set it so that it automatically just adds a .com to whatever you type. There's a tweak for it that'll do that. I think Safari on Mac does that as well.
So, Jake, you've gone to this conference. What was it called again?
Domain Roundtable.
The Domain Roundtable conference. And what have you been inspired to do? How has this changed you?
I was inspired to set up a Cedo account and just post all these, because I have like these 50 domains that, in all likelihood, and I've priced them expensively because I'm not a motivated seller. Like, I don't care if I sell the domains, but I'm at least going to do something with them. So I'm experimenting
with that. What's one that you've parked over there?
Vistatweaks.com.
Let's look at it.
Which I don't know if it's actually live with the parking yet, but I do own Vistatweaks because I registered that right as soon as I heard that Windows Vista was going to be called Windows Vista.
There it is.
It is parked. And it has a bunch of cheesy ads that have nothing to do with Windows Vista or anything else on it.
Financing, gifts, computers,
and it says that you can buy it for $1,000 because I'm not a motivated seller.
Right.
So if you really wanted Vista Tweaks, you could go buy it for $1,000 right now. And
they would sell it.
And they would sell it.
10%?
And they would take 10%.
$900
and
to Jake here.
In theory, like whatever these ads are that are on here, I could make money from the ads as well. I think there's an ad split. But ultimately I just wanted to do something so it wasn't just sitting in my domain account.
So
expiring.
It's not just,
cause I mean, if I make back the I don't remember how much I paid. I probably paid like $9 for the registration.
Right.
So if I make back that $9 from advertising, it's a win.
Yeah.
I'm better off than I was before. So that's kind of cool.
So this is a good thing. So let's say you're out there and you're like, I bought Whamalama Ding Dong, and I want... Well, that's a bad... Maybe you should go buy that, actually.
Maybe. That'd be a tough domain to type, though.
Whamalama Ding Dong.
How do you spell that? I don't even know.
I mean, you have to get both the WH and the WA.
Whamalama...
I bet somebody owns it. Well, let's say you've got it, and you haven't done anything with it. You could go to which place, Majinger?
Cedo, cedo.com. The reason I picked that one is that some of those sites require you to have a minimum number of domains to sign up for an account. And Cedo only requires you to have one domain that you're willing to put there.
Well, that's the right number.
Because, I mean, if you had zero.
And does it cost any money?
It costs no money to set up the account.
Yeah, because they make money if anybody goes there and clicks on ads. They split that with you, and then they take care of it.
Exactly.
It's like a little babysitter for your...
It's a babysitter for my domain, and if they ever happen to sell it, you know, great. I made some money.
Great.
Which is kind of cool. So that's one thing that I learned about. I actually went ahead and got a domain reseller account as well.
Uh-huh.
Well, see, this is the thing, because I figured out, like, the amount of money that I'm spending for domains, because I have a discounted price that I get through a friend that has a domain reseller account.
Right.
But, I mean, he still makes a couple bucks on every transaction, which is fair,
because
it's his account.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm paying what I would consider to be a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, but if I set up my own reseller account, the cost of the reseller account annually is actually just slightly less than the price difference between paying for all those domains if I keep re-registering them.
Right.
Which even if I don't keep re-registering those domains, I'm 100% positive that I will keep re-registering some domains.
Right.
Just because historically I've done that.
Yes.
And I'm sure I will keep doing that. And so I was just like, you know, I should probably just get a reseller account. I'm also going to set up so that you could actually register domains at MediaBlab.com so that but I'm going to do it at fairly cheap prices. I may even offer a thing because I have a premium subscription where you can get a few extra things if you subscribe to my premium service. And I think I may offer a special price to the premium service members as well. Yeah, because why not?
You know what I think would be completely evil and brilliant?
I can't wait.
Is I think it would be very interesting if somebody who was a domain reseller, you wouldn't do this because you're a good person, but somebody who was a domain reseller, basically, you know how you go and you go to look at a domain and you type it in and you see if it's available? And I think it would be interesting to have one that where you type in a domain to see if it's available and it buys it. Except it, you don't buy it. It buys it for itself. So basically,
so if you go check out
let's say you
want to
go get, you know, Wemlema Ding Dong, you go and you type in, oh, I want to check and see if it's available. But as soon as you type in Wemlema Ding Dong, it's not available because the person who's hosting that buys it.
So it's like if you
and then
you
wants to resell it to you for $1,000.
If you don't check out within a certain amount of time, then...
No, like instantly.
Oh, instantly.
As soon as you search for
it, so it's like a phishing site.
It would be a domain phishing site.
See,
I think I just gave a pirate a... complete, like, future in domain, like, hijacking.
Huh.
I apologize for that.
The thing about that is, that's kind of like phishing.
That is.
I've been suspicious that there are domain sites, because I've checked on, you know, if I just happen to be at a domain site, and I'll just check, like, and I've been suspicious, because, like, I'll check a domain, and, you know, like, I'll think about it, and I won't register it, and I'll come back a couple days later, and try to register, and it's gone, and I'm like, okay, I realize that there are a lot of people in the world, and they could all be thinking about the same... Somebody is probably thinking about the same thing I am.
13thmonkeytheory.com.
Yeah. However, it's a little suspicious that the domain that I just happened to think of 2 days ago and didn't tell anybody because it was just like a wild... I was sitting in my basement alone typing sort of wild thought of, oh, blah, 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 .com would be cool. And then it's gone a couple days later.
Blah, 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 .com would be cool.
I'm suspicious, though, that somebody else is.
What you're saying is I may not be responsible because you think that there might actually be people who are doing that right now. Could be. Possibly.
There could be. But I don't know if anybody's actually doing phishing.
Are people saying anything in the chat room here?
People are saying a little bit. I'm telling people that the show is live, but Chris is still in North Carolina. So
you have to deal with us monkeys.
You know, we just don't have the popularity that Chris does, which is why it's the Chris Perillo show and not the Bree and Jake show. Although this is fun.
I'm having a great time.
I'm almost thinking that we should do a show. Like,
let's do a show.
Once a week, just real briefly.
Let's make it an hour show, though.
We can make it an hour show.
Let's do an hour show.
I'm thinking I'm only going to do an hour show tonight just because I don't really have that much to talk about.
Okay. Let's talk about my camera.
We should talk about your camera. We've talked enough about domain names. You have a really cool new camera.
All right. So I've been making videos for a while now over at imakethings.com, and it finally just became time to step up to HD, folks. So I did my research, and I got the HC1, HDV HC1.
From Sony.
Bum, bum, bum. And it uses the CMOS chip, which is spelled CMOS, and I don't know what that means, but people like it, I guess. And it's pretty cool. It's very small. It's smaller than it looks like in the pictures.
You know what's weird?
What is?
CMOS used to mean, I don't remember exactly what it stands for, but it used to mean in webcams, it used to mean really crappy webcam, because the CMOS chip webcams used to look horrible compared to the CCD webcams. It has kind of come full circle, and now if you get a CMOS chip in a DV cam, in many cases at a comparable price point, the CMOS chip cameras look massively better than the CCD, like a comparable unit.
Well, that's basically what people said, is they said, you know, this is basically comparable to the GL2. Except that it doesn't have as much, the GL2 actually has more manual control, but it doesn't have HD. Like, it gets way better resolution. But, like, in terms of, like, they compared it to it, and then they basically said, well, except the GL2 is a couple years old and, like, way bigger.
We're going to have to do a shootout with that, I think.
Go head-to-head?
Head-to-head with it, because we have access to Chris's GL2.
Great. Bum, bum, bum. So, GL2 versus HD VHC1.
Here's a comparison to CMOS and CCD. Complementary metal oxide semiconductor is what CMOS stands for.
Oh.
And in a comparison at DALSA, Technology with Vision, which I have no idea if they know anything or not because I've never heard of them, but that doesn't mean anything. It says CCD, charged coupled device, and CMOS, complementary metal oxide semiconductor image sensors, are two different technologies for capturing images digitally. Each has unique strengths and weaknesses, giving advantages in different applications. Neither is categorically superior to the other, although vendors selling only one technology have usually claimed otherwise. In the last 5 years, much has changed, and many projections regarding the demise or ascendance of either have been proved false. The current situation and outlook for both technologies is vibrant, but a new framework exists for considering the relative strengths and opportunities of CCD and CMOS imagers. So that didn't really tell us anything. That's a bunch of marketing hype.
Yeah.
Oh, so, see, DALSA sells CCD and CMOS cameras. That's what it boils down
to. They're a motivated information gatherer.
I see. CMOS cameras may require fewer components and less power, but they generally require companion chips to optimize image quality, increasing cost, and reducing advantage they gain from lower power consumption. CCD devices are less complex than CMOS, so they cost less to design. CCD fabrication processes also tend to be more mature and optimized. In general, it will cost less in both design and fabrication to yield a CCD than a CMOS imager for a specific high-performance application. However, wafer size can be a dominating influence on device cost. The larger the wafer, the more devices it can yield, and the lower the cost per device. 200 millimeters is fairly common for third-party CMOS foundries, while third-party CCD foundries tend to offer 150 millimeters. Captive foundries use 150 millimeter, 200 millimeter, and 300 millimeter production for both CCD and CMOS. Okay, this is really boring. Sorry.
Okay, so here's the rundown. It looks really cool.
It looks, this is like one of the most sleek cameras I have seen.
It is like, you know, Auto Man or, you know, it's something out of like, some sort of cool movie that doesn't exist yet, basically. It should totally be like a flying car.
It looks like a flying car.
It's a pretty cool looking thing.
What's the model number on that again? It's the,
HDV-HC1.
HDV-HC1 from Sony.
Oh, wait. HDR-HC1.
HDR-HC1.
But then it says HDV everywhere else.
I see.
And
it just records the regular mini DV tapes, right?
Yep, that's exactly right.
MPEG 2 format?
You know, I believe... I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
That makes sense.
Because that's what most of the HDV cams are currently recording in that are at the consumer level. So... what editing software will you use to process your video from this camera?
Well, the great thing is that you can go out to DV. You can either go out in HD or you can go out to DV. So basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to shoot in HD and then I'm going to output in DV so that I can actually get it on my computer because my little old iBook just couldn't. It would not be able to handle.
It would choke on the HDV transfer stream.
It's a more meaty kind of stream action going on there, and it requires. I mean, it's like four times as big of a picture, so it's a little weighty. More, it's got more weight to the actual file. So I'm just going to output to DV, but it's everybody who's used it is very happy with it. My friend Chuck Olson of Blogumentary.
Yeah.
And the folks over at Rockaboom use these. So they.
Oh, this is the official Rockaboom
camera? This is the Rockaboom camera, yeah.
Wow. Well, that's an endorsement.
Basically, yeah. When I was in Austin, Texas, I stayed with the Rockaboom peeps, and they're friends of mine, and they basically said, "We love this camera." And I said, "Oh, yeah." And they're like, "No, we really love this camera. We got two so that we could hand them off and play them back and do multiple things with one and have another one too." And I said, "Well, how long are you going to use this? I mean, it's been out like 6 months or something." And Andrew of Rockaboom basically said, "We're going to use this for a while. We're going to use this for a year or two, we think." So their images look good enough.
Yeah, their images definitely good. I mean,
you can
see
more of the map now.
You're going down to 320 by 240 in most cases anyway.
Well, I'm going to go 400 by 240, baby. I'm going widescreen.
Oh, okay.
Or you know what? It'll probably end up being like 320 by 240, but it'll have little black bars at the top or something.
You know, I need to repair my studio. I just noticed.
I saw that earlier. In Jake's studio, he's got some foam on the wall, some noise-canceling foam.
That's the one piece of foam that I hadn't actually put adhesive on.
And I really think that you – I thought you were going to put that – when I saw that, I thought there were windows behind this foam, and now I see there are not.
There are not windows. No, the foam is entirely just to cut down some echo in the room.
Okay, so it's just not letting things bounce around as much.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I probably should have some on more because there's too much wood paneling. My basement is all wood paneling. I would have loved to do video so we could show off just how hideous my office is. We could have set up my green screen and we could have been in Hawaii.
You have a green screen?
I have a green screen.
Did you do it yourself?
No. I bought it because...
Oh!
Well... I bought it because I wanted a frame that was sturdy. Like, because I have a frame, I have a collapsible frame that's in that gray colored bag up
there.
Yeah,
I see that. It's not a bunch of PVC then.
No. That's actually like a real frame. And that's the green screen right there that I have never taken out of the package.
What a beautiful color it is.
It's a lovely green.
So vibrant.
So, yeah, so we could do green screen and be in Hawaii. But I realized.
We could travel all over the world.
We could travel all over the world in one show even.
True enough.
No, I realized that as much as we talked about doing video last week, that the amount of like setup involved in getting that to work down here was going to be a disaster. And so my backup plan was to do GoToMeeting. And unfortunately, I think the GoToMeeting account that we had has since expired. And so I couldn't even do that. Because that would have been cool as well. Speaking of HD... Because
yes.
This is this camera. I just want to like stroke it, and
it's
know.
A fondleable camera.
It's a beautiful camera. It's got a great lens.
It wasn't going to be that much more for the FX1. The FX1 is like $2,000, $2,500.
Is the FX1 actually worth getting instead?
It's bigger.
Oh, it's bigger.
It's actually more of like a bigger camera. This is actually quite tidy, and. But I travel a lot. Like I need to be able to stick. I need to be able to have a bag that has my laptop, my camera, all the microphone and gear, and that needs to go on the plane with me.
Travel sizes are important
because
I'm finding.
Because basically I'm realizing on this trip that I'm going down to the. I should talk about the Makers Fair. I'm going to Makers Fair. The Makers Fair tomorrow. And if you go to makezine.com, you can go and click on. It'll have you send you through to the Makers Fair. The Makers Fair is the coolest thing in the entire universe. Basically, if you've ever been to, like, science fair, like when you were a kid, this is like a bunch of crazy adults who are doing a science fair. Everybody's bringing these things that they make. There's a massive, massive capacity at this location we're going to be at, and it's going to be so much fun. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be so much fun. I am going to be in, like, make heaven.
I wonder if the guy that does the homemade cat drinking fountain will be there, because that's cool.
Well, he had this problem. If you go to the makezine.com/blog, this guy had a problem where his cats stopped drinking water that wasn't running. So he'd have to go over and run the sink. And you can imagine how old that got fast. Like, meow, I need to be turn on the sink for me, meow. So he took an aquarium filter.
This is genius.
And he put it on a little, it looks like a kitty litter box, honestly.
It's probably a plastic tub. Like
yeah, it's like a plastic tub. And he plugged it in, and now it sucks up water and spills it out, so it's always running water.
And the cats are okay with it, huh?
Happy cats.
Wow. This is pretty genius, though. Although, I'm not a big fan of the plastic over the outlet over here that looks all kind of duct taped, and that probably could... be done a little more neatly, but the concept
is brilliant.
CatDrinkingFountain.com.
I'm sure like somebody should get like right now.
CatDrinkingFountain.com.
This person should get it, not us.
Oh, I'm thinking I should register it.
You have that power now. You can register it with yourself since you're a domain register.
Yeah, I'm not going to worry about it right now.
Okay. Let it go.
If anybody else can get Cat Drinking Fountain, more power to them.
Yeah, go for it.
But this is a smart idea. I wonder at what point people who are in the business of like mass producing things are going to start using the MakeZine blog as a way to mine ideas.
Oh, I'm sure there's people who do that every day. They're like,
What can we do in our plastics factory now?
You know, Kat Schwartz, who was on Call for Help with Chris, once told me that she actually had the idea for the Swiffer when she was interning at whatever company it was that ultimately came out with the Swiffer. And
they didn't like her idea?
No, they loved her idea, and they took it and
made millions.
And made millions.
I hate that.
So, I mean, and honestly, I can't confirm or deny whether or not she was actually involved in the decision-making process, but I mean, that definitely seems highly likely. So, I mean, the idea that somebody would heist ideas from make certainly seems feasible. Although I took the reverse, and like with my bottle cap tripod, I took something that was being mass-produced and figured out a way to make a cheaper free cheaper $2 version that you could make at home. So this kind of goes both ways a little bit.
My in a similar vein, my friend Clark of Saturn, who's over at zipzapzop.com, he went out and he has a friend who has a cat, and it stinks up their apartment because they have a teeny tiny little New York apartment. So
yeah,
he built a cat box fan that outputs to the outdoors.
Nice.
So he built it's awesome. I mean, like basically it's a little fan. Now, I think it still needs a motion sensor. So, like, when the cat goes in there for the next hour after every time the cat goes in there, then the fan's on and then it turns off or something like that.
Wow. That would be cool. Somebody's selling the number 84.com.
For how much?
You have to make an offer. There's actually some really, like, serious domains on here. 84.com. Golf.org is on here. Speaking of golf, fix.com is for sale for $2.5 million. This is back on Cedo.
You can buy wifi.eu, but it's spelled with a 1. Man, that's a bad name.
Who knows what that is?
Yeah, that's a featured domain, though, for sale for £60.
I think you can pay extra to be a featured domain or something like that.
I win at poker, $1,200.
Yeah.
Mesothelioma.blog.com.
Mesothelioma, it's a high-paying Google keyword.
Right, because there's all those people who want to get people together and
sue. So, yeah, that one's it. But it's only going for $900 U.S., probably because it's already been
done up.
It's already been purged.
Hive.com, that's an interesting one.
Hive.com probably is actually worth some
money. I like it when they say how much money they're for sale for, though, not the make offer.
Make offer is a little cheesy because, I mean, that makes me want to say, I'll buy it from you for $20.
Yeah, I'll make an offer.
I would rather see an outrageous offer and not really want to pay for it.
Right.
So, make or fair?
Maker's fair.
What are the dates?
It's Saturday and Sunday, day after tomorrow and the next. So the Makers Fair,
those dates? Let's get the actual dates.
Well, today's the 21st, so it would be the 23rd and 24th of April. Come on down to the Makers Fair. I'll be there. Go ahead and, like, give me a little shout. Give me a secret sign. Some sort of, like, give me the code word.
And Bree's picture is on Make Zine blog, so you can easily
you can go there.
Who he is. Or you're actually, your picture's on I Make Things as well.
Yeah. It's not actually. I had a problem with my blog over at I Make Things, and now it looks very generic. I have to actually go in there and remodify my website because.
Oh, but you're in a lot of your videos.
I mean, all my videos are right there, and you can just go. You can see my.
You got to go check out his robot war. If you haven't checked out his robot war, you got to check out the robot war.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago I went and entered a robot war, and it was really fun. Basically, most of the people who enter robot wars with, like, really fancy robots. Well, I took my little Radio Shack remote control car, slapped a bunch of pink foam on it, turned it into the Eggbot, and went and rocked the house. I won the Rumble Championship.
That's so awesome.
For no other reason than people loved my robot.
I love this this picture here with you holding the robot.
Interesting story behind that picture.
Yeah?
So this guy comes up to me and this woman come up to me and they say, "Hi, we're journalists. We'd like to take your picture and hear about your robot." And I'm all about, like, talking to people. Great, you want to write about me? I will talk to you and give you the scoop. I like it. So I'm talking to them. I'm like, this is what it's all about. This is how great it is. Yada, yada, yada. This is so much fun. And
And so they say they're from the Seattleist, right? Or Seattleist.com, which is a local blog.
Yep.
And they take my picture with a Polaroid camera, which I love Polaroid cameras. I probably have 20 Polaroid cameras at home.
Like an actual, like, Polaroid that comes
with a real flash bulb.
I didn't even know you could still get those. Actually, eBay. I did know you could still get those, but I didn't know anyone still used them.
So she had a little notebook, like reporter style, and he had like a Polaroid camera with the big old flash bulb. So like I was all about it. It was great, and he took this great picture, which you can see at imakethings.com. It's a great picture of me with my robot. There's a great diagonal in the picture. I'm wearing a shirt that I made the night before because I love that shirt. That's my cool car shirt. On my shirt.
Oh, that is your car.
That's my car.
That's awesome. That's your car.
And that's my robot that I'm holding. And they took. So then I basically, they sent me the picture the next day. And so I put it on iMakeThings and I started like, I said, the awesome people over at the Seattleist did it. Well, it turns out they were lying.
They weren't really from Seattleist?
They were not from Seattleist. You know what happened? They were both really interested in the robot war. They stumbled upon it and they wanted to get closer. So they said, let's lie and pretend we're with the Seattleist. And so they walked up and said, hi, we're with the Seattleist, completely lying. And they got a great interview out of me, which will never see the light of day. And they're actually really nice people. And
so why would you go to that extreme of faking it?
I mean, because they wanted to get closer and see the robots closer. Robots have that kind of power.
You know, I just talk to people if I really want to talk to them. I don't really worry about whether or not. I don't say, hey, I'll blog about you if you'll talk to me.
Well, needless to say.
I mean, I do if somebody's important.
The next day after I totally like, because I put it out, they sent me like three pictures that they took and were like, put these pictures out and just credit us. And but they didn't, like, so I credited them to the Seattleist, right?
Yeah.
Which was wrong.
It
turns out that the guy is actually in a band here in Seattle.
The
photographer's
cool.
In a band. So I was able to attribute to his band. And the woman does really cool work with some advertising agencies, which are in town, which do, like, crazy stuff. What are the names of that? What's the name of that advertising agency? It's, like, something like Girls School or something like that.
Girls School?
Yeah, it's like, I wish I could remember. It's like, I don't know. What is it called when you go away to girls' school? You go to a boarding school?
Boarding school?
I think that's the name of the advertising is, like Girls Boarding School or something like that. And they do these crazy advertisements, and she works for them.
Is that over in, Ballard?
It could be.
Because there's some wacky advertising firms over in Ballard, I think.
You know, I could be getting the name totally wrong.
Over by,
I know it has something to do with girls' school.
Is it Oxycodle, the Mexican restaurant over there?
Yeah.
If you've never been to that Mexican restaurant, by the way, you have to go.
Okay.
It's amazing.
I will go dueling Mexican restaurants with you. What about the one that gives you the burrito that's the size of your head? Have you ever been to that one?
I've been to one
the
like
Hawaiian
that.
The Hawaiian Mexicans.
I've been to that one like that in Iowa. But
this place is amazing. In fact, we have to go there. I want to go there like right now. It's so good. What is it called? It's, oh my gosh, it's so good.
There's another place called Cactus. Down in
that
Madison
is a good
Park.
Place.
It's not really.
They make great margaritas.
Yes, they make awesome margaritas. Actually, I love. They have a lemonade that they put jalapenos in.
Oh.
And it's jalapeno lemonade. It's the most phenomenal thing ever. This is the first time I found out about this from Dave Sampson from Mixmeister, who also makes the podcasting app Propaganda, and it is this phenomenal. Like I'd never thought of putting jalapenos in lemonade, and I love it. And I actually asked one time when I was there, I asked them to make me a margarita with jalapenos in it, and that was pretty tasty too.
Wow.
So
you know what else is in that same vein is good, which is why I completely believe you that is awesome, is lemon juice with chopped up ginger and cayenne pepper.
Really?
Yeah. Like, and just like straight, and honey. All those things put together, you wouldn't think they're good. There used to be a restaurant called the Green Cat, and it made this thing. And it's like the cold killer, basically. And it's actually really good.
You know, I believe that's the cold killer, because I think...
Ginger's good for your throat. Cayenne's good for your immune system. Lemons are good for everything. And honey is good for your throat, too.
The only thing you're missing is, like, some aloe juice.
Now, if you made it with aloe juice instead of water, then you'd have, like... And, you know, you'd have to throw some garlic in there if you were really going to go crazy.
Actually, what's really missing is, like, tequila or something. Not really.
That's a drink for the people with drinking needs. Yeah.
Actually, that probably wouldn't taste very good at all. Because the tequila is awful limey to be putting mixing with the ginger. And
yeah, I think you'd have to replace the ginger with the tequila.
Yeah. Which wouldn't be a bad thing, necessarily. But then you just end up with that other drink that I was talking about, so it's not really a new and tasty drink.
El Puerco's over in Bellevue, another great Mexican restaurant.
El Puerco's?
El Puerco's.
Have not been there.
El Cochino del Puerco.
Although, you
the
know,
kitchen of the pig.
Interesting.
It's been there forever, and it's very good. It's on Main Street, just west of 8th Avenue.
I've been almost nowhere in on the east side to eat.
You know, there's an amazing place in Crossroads Mall that makes Indian this thing, but I forget what it's called. My memory is just
the Indian
not
place.
Yeah, the Indian place.
I've been to the Indian place.
Isn't that place great? Crossroads Mall. Who would know? Over in the east side of Bellevue.
And that's the strangest mall in the world.
You know, a friend of mine's grandfather used to own that property as
really?
A farm.
As a farm?
As a farm.
Wow.
Like in the 20s.
Huh.
When Bellevue was but strawberry fields and orchards.
Long before Microsoft and the power company moved into the east side and decided to dominate.
I grew up in Bellevue.
Really?
Don't hold it against me.
See, I just, you know, my whole thing is I really hate driving across the bridge in traffic.
Yeah. And it's actually really, when there's no traffic, you couldn't get a better drive. It's so beautiful.
Cool drive. Especially if the sun's shining and you can see, if you can see Mount Rainier.
And the bridge isn't sinking into the lake.
Yeah, if the bridge isn't sinking, that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
I've actually been on that bridge, which I'm sure as a longtime Seattle resident, you probably have this experience more than once. But I've been on the bridge when the waves coming off the lake are so bad that they're coming up over the wall of 520 and splashing on your windshield.
That's very exciting.
To the point where you can't see. And, yeah, that's a little unnerving. That's an experience I haven't really ever had before. So you're going to have to hack your battery.
So one of the downsides of this HD camera is that I got this one little battery, and I actually have from my other camera, it's the same kind of battery as my other camera, so I already have like two batteries. But I thought, you know, I'm going to get the really fancy, bigger battery. Well, I'm like, wow, $50 for a Sony battery, that's really cheap. Turns out it wasn't a Sony battery, it's some no-name brand. But the problem is that Sony has DRM'd everything on this camera. Like, you have the hot shoes DRM'd, everything is DRM'd to just... Because they want to sell you their crappy little microphone for the top. They want to sell you this cord for this, that, and the other. They want to sell you all this stuff so it all just plays within the Sony little world. And the battery, they've actually remade the camera so that batteries like this, they put a little divot in it. Makes it impossible for me to use this battery. I'm either going to have to like sand off this little thing on the camera that's refusing to let the battery go on, or I'm going to have to like Dremel a hole in the battery.
Now, what would actually... Why wouldn't the battery makers figure this out?
You'd think. I think, you know, they probably figured it out for another camera. See, I can even get it to work, but it doesn't hook in.
Oh, so it actually will connect. It will connect.
It just won't stay.
That's what duct tape is for.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be a pair of pliers.
That's just... Because that doesn't look like... I mean, you know, and the thing is, you're going to find out that that little piece of plastic actually, like, runs the entire camera when you take it off. But, no, it looks like it's just a stupid piece of plastic that should come off. So, I don't know. That's a little annoying.
Let's do it. You got a pair of pliers?
Do you really just want to break it
off
right here?
Let's do it.
I'll have to... Here, hold on. I'll go get a pair of pliers.
So what we're about to do is I just got this HD camera like overnight shipped to me today, right? And I don't even need to put a tape in it. And we're already taking the pliers to it, folks. We are going to take this little piece of plastic that's refusing to let my non-Sony battery go in there. And we're just going to rip it off. We're going to just like yank it off. It's just going to be a matter of like moments here before I tear it up. Okay, we got some needle nose pliers here. I am a man of hackability here. There it goes. Oh, Sure enough, doing that, I've made a hole into it.
That's a hole?
Is that no, really there's a hole into the camera where I've taken this little thing off.
Are you kidding me? Hey, let me see this. I gotta look.
Okay, take a look.
It's not like a dongle or something, is it, where it's going to break the camera?
Let's see. Hopefully it wasn't going to hold the thing on there. Nope, works perfectly fine.
Does it turn on?
Well, this is a new battery. Let's see if there's any charge in it. It does. Turns on great.
Now, does the official Sony battery actually still connect? Or have you broken the Sony battery as a result? Because there's like a weird little lump in there.
There is a weird little lump in there. Okay, let's turn this off. Let's see how much battery how much charge they shipped this battery with. All right, it's calculating the battery info here.
It's like, this is not a Sony battery. That was the info calculator that you just broke off right there.
Yeah.
All right, we have no info.
We're not going to wait for that. Let's see how much
we have no info.
No, works fine. Maybe it held it in a little bit better or something like that, but I don't think so.
I don't know.
No, that's perfectly fine. I have now un-DRM'd my battery on the back here.
Why would that make a hole, though? That's weird.
Because they were trying to save a little bit of plastic.
So it was actually a hollow piece of plastic that was on the back of there.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Talk about cheap.
Okay, I'm going to smash this in here so it just...
You know... That's why I have a love-hate relationship with Sony, because I really like the Sony PSP. And I actually really like that little Sony camera that I got.
I want one of those Sony PSPs. I like those.
The price should drop here sometime in the near future.
Why is that?
Well, because they're later this fall, I think, they're coming out with a new and improved Sony PSP.
A PSP 2?
I don't know if they're really going to call it a 2, or if it's just sort of an incremental upgrade.
PSP2.com.
PSP2.com? Surely somebody ready. How about PSP 3? Did they get PSP 3? That'll be the real test. Because, I mean, Sony has stuck with the PS line. You know, and there's actually an interesting story about somebody was actually sitting on the domain PSP.com. Like somebody had bought it long
before. Did they sue them?
No, but they had bought it long before the PSP was to be released. And Sony actually bought it on the market for much less than it probably should have gone for, because the people that were selling it had no clue that Sony was coming out with something called the PSP. So Sony got away with a bargain.
Well, good for them.
I think we're going to say goodbye for this week. The Makers Faire is April 22nd and 23rd.
And
in San Francisco.
Yep, and if you watch magazine.com/blog, you'll be seeing lots of videos. I'll be going down there, sticking the camera in people's faces who are making and, like, hacking really cool things, you know?
And if you want to park your domains for free, SEDO.com
right,
is a cool place to do it. And you might even make some money as a result of it. And maybe enough money to recover the registration fee, so it'll keep you motivated to renew the domain at the end of the year. And, of course, if you want to save money on domain registrations...
Oh, yes, this is very important.
GoDaddy.com. Use the coupon codes Chris1, Chris2, or Chris3, and you'll save a few bucks on domain registrations. When I signed up for my own reseller account, I used the 10% off coupon, which is Chris1, and I actually saved like $22 as a result, which is pretty darn cool.
That's great.
So I helped support my own show and saved money at the same time, which is always a good thing.
And the great thing about that is that I like about those Chris1, Chris2, and Chris3 codes is that you can plug them all in and see how much you're going to save with each one and get the best code for your GoDaddy needs.
I don't remember, but I think Chris3 actually is like $695.com domain registrations, which, as far as I know, you can't get .com domains cheaper than that anywhere else. Like the reseller account I have, I can't even get $695 domains.
The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Now, with your GoDaddy.com domain registration, you get hosting, a free blog, complete email, and more. Plus, as a listener of The Chris Perillo Show, enter code Chris1, that's C-H-R-I-S, and the number 1 when you check out, and save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.